Hello, and welcome to the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Bomano, your host, and we're here to help achievers and business owners and leaders move forward so they can reach their potential. That's what Avanti means, move forward, and that's what we'll do today. The way I do this is I interview Rochester's business movers and shakers. Today, I have on the show a great guest, Duncan Moore, from many things. Today, I'm going to say he's from the University of Rochester, which is his main gig, but Duncan got a lot of things going on, a lot of irons in the fire, which is great. So, Duncan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So I met you years ago, I think through Bob Tobin, because you are doing a lot of things here at U of R, and we'll talk about that. But Bob was starting to retire and brought me in to teach a program here at the U of R in entrepreneurship, the key program. I think that's how I met you. I might have met you beforehand, just on other circles, right? Mm-hmm. So, great to have you on the show. Really, really appreciate it. And so, Duncan, you know, your bio, I'm holding it here. And it's so impressive that I can't read the whole thing because it might take up the whole show. So you've had quite the journey so far. So if you were to tell us, you know, maybe we take it in parts. You know, who is Duncan Moore, and how did you get here? How did you get to U of R? And I think a lot of your official titles have to do with optics, but really, you're also waist deep in entrepreneurship as well. So maybe if you could try to explain all that to our listeners, and we get our head around everything that Duncan Moore is doing for the community.
Well, I came to Rochester about 40 years ago to be here for 1 year. I came from the University of Maine. I grew up in Maine. Had never lived outside of Maine until I moved to Rochester. Got here, and my intention was to get a master's degree in optics and then go get a PhD in astronomy. I was interested in astronomical instrumentation, and I thought it'd be really good to get a master's degree in optics before I got my PhD. I got here, and I had some incredible professors here, Bob Hopkins, Rudolph Kingsley, Brian Thompson, Parker Givens, and I realized this optics thing is a really good thing to be doing, and in Rochester, New York, it was the place to do it.
Bosch and Lum kind of kicked off some good momentum, right?
Well, B&L, I was working at B&L in Kodak. Mm-hmm. In fact, I got the idea for my master's thesis in gradient index optics, which is what I've done most of in my life, from my lab partner in college at Maine, who had gone to work at Kodak, and they had discovered some new materials that they were working on, but they didn't know how to analyze them. So I found a faculty member, Peter Sands, who was here at the time, and he got interested in the gradient index also. And so he published some theoretical papers, and I started doing some design work with him, and that became my master's thesis. I then went to Weston Electric, who had supported my master's degree, and there I worked on picture film, because everybody's going to have a picture film by the 1980s. Hmm. That didn't happen. So, because at that point, the low-loss fiber had just been invented, but it had not been commercialized, and doesn't get commercialized for more than another decade. And so the bandwidth issues were a problem. And then I also worked on photolithography, that is the process of making integrated circuits, where the size of the lines were measured in 25 microns or more. And the idea was if you got down to 5 microns, that would be at the limit of optical lithography. I don't know what they're down to now, but it's sub-tenths of a micron at this point. And so it's really been an amazing journey. So I came back to Rochester, got my PhD, and then joined the faculty.
Mm-hmm. And that was, when did you join the faculty?
In the 70s.
In the 70s, okay. So you've seen U of R. I mean, it's always been a tremendous school, but, I mean, you were here just to see it explode.
Yeah, it's obviously much bigger than it was when I was here as a student.
Yeah.
In both the graduate and undergraduate programs. I don't know what the number of undergraduates was when I was here because I was never an undergraduate.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been you look at the physical plant, particularly under the presidency of Joel Seligman, we've, you know, built a lot of buildings, modernized a lot of buildings. So it's really, really improved for all of us.
So I want to explore optics a little bit more and then move into entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Because traditionally when you meet a professor of optics, not always automatically going to, director of entrepreneurship, right? You know, so you're very unique in the fact that you're taking this industry and realizing it's got, you know, so many potentials for business, right? And so really Rochester has become such a hotbed for the optics industry, especially as it relates to entrepreneurial ventures. You know, we just recently had the Luminate event downtown, which was, and for those of you that don't know what Luminate is, I didn't either about a month ago. A friend of mine, Andy Simon, who has helped organizing it for Jim Sinnell at High Tech Rochester, told me a little bit about it. And essentially there was, and correct me if I leave some stuff out, but what I saw was an incredible event, 300 plus people at the downtown Hyatt. And there was at this event, there was 25 companies that had 2 minutes-ish to present. And I believe they were finalists from Quelled Down from a previous competition. And so they gave a PowerPoint and a presentation, 2 minutes. And then 10 of those won $100,000 each. And also the opportunity to be in the accelerator at High Tech Rochester. Free rent, services, all that good stuff. And now out of those 10 companies, 2 are going to get selected and they'll get $1 million apiece?
I think that's right. There's a $2 million total cap, and I don't know how it's actually going to be divided, whether it's going to be two $1 million ones or it's going to be based on the need of the company. One maybe gets more and one gets less. I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I got
to
tell you, being just a layman of business, I was blown away at this event. And just first of all, how smart these business owners were in this industry, the optics industry and photonics industry, right? And they were. It was just. The average IQ in that room must have been really high. I brought it down for sure. But it was. It's a really, really impressive event. And so a lot of people know that Rochester is. Are we calling it the optics capital now, right?
Is optics, you know, photonics,
imaging. Photonics. But I've talked to some very intelligent people that say, oh, that's great, photonics. I really don't understand what photonics is. I mean, I just was talking to somebody, very intelligent businessman yesterday, and he really couldn't explain what photonics is or are. Maybe can you give us maybe the elevator pitch for an overview of the layman's explanation of photonics?
Well, the word derives from electronics, where in electronics you have electrons flowing through wires. This now has light flowing through things like fiber optics within, or you can have integrated optical chips, where light is going through them and being modulated. So the modulators that you need to transport information on a fiber, you've got to do it in bits of zeros and ones. And so you're doing the same thing, but instead of doing it with electrons, you're doing it with photons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it's kind of it grew out of the idea that, you know, there's optics and optics. There's a big debate within the optics community whether optics encompasses photonics, or photonics encompasses all of optics. It depends where you were trained.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you're trained at Rochester, you think of photonics being a subset of optics. If you're trained other places, they think of optics being just the part that's lenses and things of that sort. But that's a debate that's not really worth having.
Right. Yeah. It's a cool technology that's working well.
So. Right.
Hey, Duncan, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I'm here with Duncan Moore from the University of Rochester, and we'll be right back.
Weekday evening, 6 to 9, it's Chad Benson. Join Chad for refreshingly different commentary on today's news on WOKR.
Do you use the expensive blue or yellow pills to charge your sex life? Are you thinking about it? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pills deliver the exact same results for less than $3. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. And right now, radio callers will get 44 blue or yellow pills for $120 with free discreet shipping. You can save more than $700 off pharmacy prices. Charge your sex life now and save a ton of money. Call now and get your 44 pills and save over $700 and qualify for free shipping. Stop overpaying and call right now.
800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. That's 800-223-0992.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 of pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-660-9974 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-660-9974 to take your call now. Call 877-660-9974. That's 877-660-9974. Again, 877-660-9974.
That's what I'm talking about. 1310 WOKR.
Okay, we are back with the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Momato, your host. I'm here with Duncan Moore, who's a professor at the University of Rochester, and so much more, taking optics and photonics and turning it, really leading the way to many ways, not only with the U of R, but in the community, involved in many, many activities, I'll say, about turning this incredible industry into entrepreneurial adventures as well. And I know you too because I run a program here called the Key Program, which we're changing the brand and the name, so that's coming up. But that's under really, I know it's run through some different programs, but it's really through the Ames School of Entrepreneurship, right?
Ames Center for Entrepreneurship.
Ames Center for Entrepreneurship. And you, so tell me about that. Tell me how that came to be and your involvement with that place.
Okay, so the history of entrepreneurship at the University of Rochester is pretty long, actually.
Yeah.
We recently did a little chart with the journey of entrepreneurship, and we taught our first entrepreneurship class here at the U of R 40 years ago.
Wow.
In 1978.
Yeah.
We taught our first class on technical entrepreneurship in 1988, so that's 30 years ago next month. And so we've been doing this for a while, but the big change was in 2004 when we got a major grant from the Kauffman Foundation, which bills itself as the Foundation of Entrepreneurship. And we were one of 8 universities in the United States to get one of these. And it was $3.6 million, which was matched by the university 2-1. So it added another $7.2 million. So the total program was over $10 million. And it was really to embed entrepreneurship throughout the campus. Prior to winning the grant, we had the Eastman School of Music had a program called Institute for Music Leadership, which was really entrepreneurship, but the faculty of the Eastman School didn't like the word entrepreneurship. So we've had this problem in many different parts of the university where people think of entrepreneurship as being just starting businesses. We think of it as being a way of thinking. And so it doesn't make any difference what school or organization you're in, you still can be entrepreneurial. And so we have courses in our Warner School of Education and entrepreneurship thinking. We have programs, obviously, at the Eastman School, as I mentioned. We have in the business school. We have in engineering. We have the Center for Nursing Entrepreneurship, which, you know, really is an important part of the university. Excuse me. So in 2004, we got this grant. We were able to really expand our offerings. And that's when we began the Center for Entrepreneurship. It was named as a result of a gift from Mark and Carolyn Ain in 2015 to switch over just being the center to being the Mark and Carolyn Ain Center for Entrepreneurship. So that's when it got its name. But the big change was back in 2004. And so that we're able to move the whole thing up a long way. The decision was made in 2006 to create a position called Vice Provost for Entrepreneurship, which I hold. And the reason for that was they didn't want entrepreneurship to be just in one school. If it was only within the Simon School, perhaps the other schools wouldn't play nicely, as I would say. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody recognized that entrepreneurship was not just about one school. And
that's a way of thinking, like you said.
It's a way of thinking. And Joel was kind of a leader in getting that part of it going.
Right. So I'm talking to Duncan Moore from the University of Rochester. Duncan, on your bio here, I would like to see your business card because it's got to be pretty darn big. So it says, Duncan Moore, Vice Provost for Entrepreneurship, the Rudolph and Hilda Kingslake Professor of Optical Engineering, Professor of Optics, Professor of Biomedical Engineering, Professor of Business Administration. So that's not your normal, titles, right?
Right.
It's a good mix.
Yeah, so I've helped in the entrepreneurship program not only across the campus but within the Simon School. And so I have a faculty meeting this afternoon of the entrepreneurship faculty of Simon. And then we have another meeting that's a monthly meeting of, which is a luncheon, where anybody who's doing anything with entrepreneurship, we get together, we talk about best practice, talk about things that are going on both in the university and in the community. And so we'll have people from the Eastman School of Music there. We'll have people from the Warner School of Graduate Education. We'll have people from nursing and so forth. And we all get together and involves both staff and faculty.
Yeah. So, it must be exciting for you. I mean, there's never a boring day. I mean, you're kind of, that exercise program called CrossFit. You're like the academia fit, right? I mean, you're everything from business administration to entrepreneurship to optics and photonics. Mm-hmm. So every day's got to be either exhausting and or very exciting for you.
No, I think it's really exciting. I mean, I think this is, I like to say to people when they ask me if I'm going to retire, I say, I get to work with really smart 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
And there's a very, hardly a day goes by when I don't learn something.
Yeah, that's great.
They're very gifted students. You can see them in your classes, and they're here because they want to learn.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and I like your philosophy, and I when I talk about entrepreneurship, I your philosophy of like it's a mindset that really. Everybody needs to be thinking entrepreneurially. I don't care if you're a researcher at Kodak in the dark room, you need to be thinking about how can your research, prove to be a product that gets funded or, just be kind of thinking that through. Whatever you're doing, how can we turn this into a solution, a business, a program, et cetera, right? So I like your thinking, whether you're, the stereotypical entrepreneur where, the Tom Galisano that starts a business from scratch with credit cards and becomes a millionaire, billionaire, or if you are an optics guy and maybe not saying never would classify yourself as an entrepreneur, but you are because you're thinking like an entrepreneur. Like, how can I scale this idea? How can I bring this solution to the masses, right? And if you're solving any type of quote unquote problem, that's what you want to do is help as many people as you can, right?
Right.
So. That's excellent. So you were very involved in the community. I mean, I think every event that has something to do with entrepreneurship, I see you there. I see you at the business plan competition, usually at one of the local colleges where, we're vetting some of the students. What are some of the things that you have, other irons in the fire when it comes to the community-related activities?
So we are responsible for helping run the entrepreneurship competition, business plan competition in the spring for the state of New York for the Finger Lakes region. Mm-hmm. So that this location rotates around from RIT to U of R. It's been out in Geneseo and it's been at Fisher. And so this is a local competition from which in the six categories, two teams go on to Albany to the finals. And this is usually held early April of a year, and the finals are late April in Albany. So we've been doing that for the last 5 years in terms of doing that. So that's a community-wide one. We also have an entrepreneurship summit, which is for universities and colleges that are in Western New York. So it kind of goes from Buffalo to Cornell. We do that twice a year to bring people together to talk about what's going on at other schools around the region. I'm active in the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Program, which Chris Whitman and Teresa Mazzolo are in charge of. So there's a strong entrepreneurship component in that one, and I've been involved in that from the very beginning of that program. In fact, I chose to do that over optics 5-6 years ago because I thought that's where I could do more than in that program than I could in an optics program. So I was a judge for the Luminate competition, which is pretty cool.
It must have been tough.
It was tough. There's no doubt about it because we interviewed all 25 teams. Well, I should say at least two groups of people interviewed 25 teams. We were divided really into two basic groups, and so my group interviewed 13, and the other group interviewed 12, and so for a half hour each.
Right.
That was a long. Well, it was a long night.
Very intense.
Because it went from 7:30 to almost 10 o'clock night, and then we started at 8 o'clock the next morning,
right,
till noontime, and so then we had to spend nearly 2 hours into deliberation.
Yeah.
To determine, you know, it's always easy to get the top two, top three. It's always easy to get the bottom, you know, 4 or 5, and then when you get to the middle, the nasty middle. And, you know, who's going to be 10th and who's going to be 11th? It's a big deal at this point.
That's the tough deliberating. So speaking of Illuminate, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I went to this event. It was at the Hyatt a couple weeks ago. It was High Tech Rochester put it on. Lieutenant Governor was there. And to my surprise, I didn't know this either. Like a lot of these 25 companies were not from Rochester. I mean, they're from all over the place. They're from even overseas.
Yeah, there were teams that were in the final 25 from... There was one from Scotland. I think there was one from Ireland. And I think there's one more international one. There was one from Canada.
Yeah.
But that's not really international. Well,
That's why Rochester is the greater international airport, right? Because we fly to Toronto.
Yeah. That is a joke. So Waterloo, Waterloo made the finals.
Mm-hmm.
One of the 10 companies that made the finals was from Waterloo. And so... you know, I think it's really it's an exciting time. I think that one of the things the community needs to do is make sure that when this competition occurs in June, we try to keep all 10 of the companies here in Rochester, even the ones that didn't get the big bucks. Because one of the failures of some of these programs has been that the companies moved out after they got the money and they went through the program. We need to make sure that we're selling these people on the idea. Excuse me. They're selling these people on the fact that if you're in this space of optics, photonics, and imaging, this is where you want to be, independent of whether you got the money or not. And that we want to make sure that during this six-month period that they're being exposed to all the stuff we do. And it's not just technology, because one of the important parts that's been proven in terms of keeping companies like this in town, you know, or in a region, is to, you know, make sure that the arts and other parts of it are emphasized too, because they want to see everything. And we've got a very strong arts community here. We've got strong museums, and we've got to make sure that they're all introduced to all of these things and say, oh, you know, I want to be in Rochester. You know, I came here, as I said before, to be here for 1 year, and I've been here for more than 40. And so it's a really good town. The people here are very kind. And, you know, I think they'll find it that way also.
Well, it's funny. So a few weeks ago, I had Bob Duffy on the show.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that don't know Bob Duffy, he'll be living in a cave. But current president, Chamber of Commerce, former mayor, former lieutenant governor, former police chief. And he talked about when he was mayor, you know, he would be involved sometimes in recruiting companies, trying to help companies recruit people to come into town. And he said Rochester was the hardest town to recruit to. Because unfortunately, people thought snow, but he said it was but it also was the hardest town to get them to move out of because they fell in love with it.
Good,
you know, especially if you're, you know, listen, if you're 22 and you're looking for like a vibrant city life, well, there's parts of Rochester that could satisfy your need, but it's not in New York City for sure. But if you are And that's why a lot of people come home, because if you are ready to live in a great place that has so much to offer, great schools, great culture, incredible education, colleges, high schools, so much to do, it's probably, bar none, one of the best places to raise a family in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I grew up in, was born in Greece, grew up in Pittsburgh. I had a Mayberry upbringing, right? I mean, it's I can't complain about a thing. Mm-hmm. And if you want to send your kid to a private school, you certainly could. But in the, you know, at least in the suburbs, you don't have to. You know, obviously with the Rochester City School District, we have some work to do, and that's a whole other story, unfortunately. But if you're trying to raise a family in the suburbs of Rochester, New York, I mean, it's bar none one of the, what I think, one of the best places in the world to do so. So, and obviously it worked for you. So
it did indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So, how, you know, so when you first came here, and seeing the community now, what are some major changes in the community that you've seen as it relates to entrepreneurship?
Well, I think that we have to remember that the entire 20th century was based on three large corporations,
mm-hmm.
Kodak, Xerox, and Bausch & Lomb.
Yeah.
And as I like to say, entrepreneurship was bred out of our environment in a Darwinian thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have three or four generations of people that go through the system, and you know, your grandfather could work for Kodak, your father could work for Kodak, you could work for Kodak or Xerox or Bausch & Lomb or whatever, why, you get a good retirement, you go home, you can send your kids to college, you could do everything here and have this so-called security of a job. And because that all changed in the 1980s, but the change was very gradual. If you look at the unemployment situation up until 2008 during the recession, the unemployment here was never above 5%. Because what happened was, as Kodak downsized, of course, they did that by selling off divisions to various other companies. So on Friday, you were working for Kodak, and on Monday, you were working for somebody else for the same boss in the same building, but you're getting a different paycheck. So that made a big difference. We didn't have the situation like a lot of Rust Belt cities did, where the steel mill closed, and you had people with typically high school education making $25 an hour, and there weren't any other jobs like that in the community. And so we have a relatively well-educated workforce here, and that makes a huge difference. Now, when the recession hit, we, like everybody else in the country, got hit by that also. But it really has taken a time to change the whole culture around. And it takes about 20 years. It takes about, you know, one, you know, lifetime of a person.
Hey, Duncan, sorry to cut you off. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about how entrepreneurship is evolving, we'll say, in Rochester.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
Weekday evening, 6 to 9, it's Chad Benson. Join Chad for refreshingly different commentary on today's news on WOKR.
I'm Chuck Hamlick, CNBC. Inflation rose and sales fell, but Wall Street's not too worried. After dropping 150 points at the open, the Dow is now just down 25. The NASDAQ is up 53, the S&P 7. Shares of Chipotle Mexican Grill are caliente. Chipotle hired away Taco Bell CEO to run the company, a move investors think Chipotle needs to make. The job opening sign is out at a pair of familiar stores, Home Depot hiring 80,000 workers for the spring, Lowe's adding 53,000. Sam's Club now offering free shipping to its premium club members. That does not include, though, some fresh foods that maybe are not meant to be shipped. And an unhappy customer is suing L.L. Bean over its new return policy, saying the company broke a promise to its customers. Last week, Bean said it was imposing a one-year limit for most returns because it said too many people were abusing the unlimited return policy. Once again, the Dow down 31, the NASDAQ up 50. Chuck Hamlick, CNBC.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For a free quote, call 800-603-1330. That's 800-603-1330. 800-603-1330. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic bed.
My Bad Back loves my Craftmatic adjustable bed.
These aren't actors. They're real people who sleep better every night thanks to their Craftmatic adjustable bed. Just call 800-410-6118. That's 800-410-6118 for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. Amaze yourself and see how little they cost. Rated number one nationwide on consumeraffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. So if you've ever had a bad night's sleep, wake up sore, stiff, with back, neck, or shoulder pain, call for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. Amaze yourself. See how little they cost. Call 800-410-6118. That's 800-410-6118. 800-410-6118. Call now.
Finally, a radio station for conversation. 1310 WOKR.
Hello and welcome. We're back with the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Mamano, your host. I'm here with Duncan Moore today from the University of Rochester, who is very involved in many, many things in Rochester. His full-time gig is U of R, but does a lot of other things for the entrepreneurial scene here in Rochester. Been here since the 70s. And we were talking about how Rochester has evolved over the years from an entrepreneurial perspective. Obviously, the early roots of Rochester were massively entrepreneurial when you think about George Eastman. I mean, all the guys that kicked off these big three, Bosch and Lohm, I mean, Strong, right, everybody, Wilson. And then, to your point, we had, you know, two, three generations of people working for these big companies, didn't have to think about being entrepreneurial. So, as we started out with a bang of entrepreneurship, there was some stabilization. But as those three companies they're still around, but they're shadows of what they used to be. The good thing about those companies is that they employed some really wicked smart people that, to your point, they weren't working at the steel mill making $20 an hour, and now they didn't know what to do. They started other companies, right? So we became kind of a hotbed of smaller and medium-sized businesses. And if anybody knows about Rochester and they don't live here, I hear it a lot that it's, for a city our size, it's just full of wicked smart people. And that's always a nice compliment. And obviously it has to do with the U of R and RIT, our educational system here. A lot of the companies where, really incubated and continue to grow these smart people. Tons of patents here, right? Aren't we one of the top producers of patents and all that? So
yeah, I'd like to actually talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I've got a really interesting plot of the number of patents that were issued to Kodak from the period about 2004, I think, to 2014, and then the patents issued to all other companies. And in 2004, they were both about 550.
Wow.
Okay, so
all other companies.
Kodak had 550. I mean, one was 600 and one was 550. I can't remember which. And so Kodak had 550. I think the rest, all of it had 600.
Wow.
Okay, so had about half the patents.
Right.
If you look at by 2012, the Kodak number had gone down under 200, and it was only because it takes so long to get a patent. That means the system takes a while just to get them through the system, and so, but the total had doubled. So what that means is we've got a lot more intellectual horsepower here, that's a lot more diversified. So going forward, this is really good news for our community, I believe, that people say, it's terrible Kodak left. Yes, it's terrible Kodak left or get downsized. But we've got this other part of our community, which I think is very, very important and it will carry us a long time.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you're talking about Rochester being entrepreneurial, and you said it takes about 20 years to really kind of get that flywheel turning again, right?
Yeah, you look in the history of Austin or San Diego or places like that, where you go, oh, they're very entrepreneurial. Well, Austin used to be a cow town. San Diego was a Navy town. And, you know, some leaders in each of those towns decided, okay, we can't be this anymore. And so, you know, they took, you know, it takes, you know, people realizing there's a problem. I mean, it took us a long time for our elected officials to understand that we had a problem, that, it, you know, the Kodak was not coming back. If you look at the plot of the number of employees beginning in 1983 when it peaked at about 62,000.
Just here in Rochester.
Just here in Rochester. And you look at that plot, and you look over time, it's going down, 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 down. You know, there may have been a little blips here and there that went up, but the long-term trend was not in the positive direction. But, you know, people didn't want to believe it because, as I said, we did it for the entire 20th century. And so these were just temporary blips that were going to occur.
A lot of denial.
A lot of denial. I mean, and it's tough. And, the, you know, the advantage of having a steel plant closed down, I mean, there's no real good thing answer there, is everybody realized, oh, my God, we got a problem.
It's done.
It's done. And we, if we don't address this right now, I'm not going to get reelected.
Like Pittsburgh, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and you look at what Pittsburgh is today. Pittsburgh is an amazing city.
It's happening. It's good, good looking and full of activity.
Exactly right. But, you know, you look at that, you know, from the time they went from these disastrous time to where, you know, when they were really built up, it was, I think it was nearly 20 years. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, we look at see what's going on downtown in Rochester. I mean, it's really remarkable what's going on in the city down around Sibley and, you know, that whole area. It's just, I mean, I was there for the Illuminate event, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I go to the convention center, and I go to the Hyatt. I go in the South Avenue garage, and that's what I've been doing. I didn't go beyond that.
Yeah, now you want to go walk around.
Right, exactly.
And that whole area is just coming alive. I mean, a lot of that, what was going to be that Renaissance Square, now that's, you know, I think that's the next to get knocked down slash redeveloped. And then obviously the Sibley area, they knocked down Midtown, Parcel 5's there. We'll see if the theater goes there. There's the new building, I forgot what it's called, but Bergman and Branca is in there. The Galena family is redoing the Chase Tower, which is now the Metropolitan, which is really cool. I was in there the other night too. You know, Krista Morgan redoing the Hyatt, the Strath Allen. So it's there's kind of a renaissance going on in Rochester right now.
Yep.
We're now, you know, so you had the fortune just to have the vision of when you moved here, Rochester was vibrant downtown, right? There was Midtown, people would shop at Sibley's, there was stuff going on, right?
Yeah, and there was a railroad, remember that monorail?
But then you saw just the suburban flight and everything. I mean, I used to work in Midtown back in the day when I was working for a radio station. You know, they had office buildings in there. Wegmans was there. I mean, it was, you know, it was still, it was the end, but it was still kind of happening. But then it just emptied out, right? Then it just was a ghost town. And now it's coming back. It is very exciting. So based on you being able to kind of see the ups and downs and ups again, you know, if you had a crystal ball and you had to predict the next 50 years of Rochester, and what are some of the industries or companies that are going to be leading the way? Any insights on that?
I think it's hard to have a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. I think there's some of the biomedical optics things. The combination of biomedical and optics is going to be a hot area. We've obviously got a lot of intellectual horsepower over at the Med Center. How do we harness that with the University of Rochester being the largest employer in town, mainly because of the hospital? I think that could be a leader for it. I think we have good leadership here at the University of Rochester in terms of being engaged in the community, which is very important. I've been here under four different presidents, and this is the first president who's been really engaged with the community.
And that
makes a big difference. There's no doubt about that. And I think Joel was brought in because he was going to be engaged with the community, and he's done that.
I have a really cool story about Joel. So the president, Dr. Joel Seligman. So I was in a airport in Seattle, and you know I forgot what I was there for a conference, and I saw him, and I've seen him, I've met him, two or three times at functions where he probably met 50 other people. So there's no way in my mind he knows who I am, and I'm cool with that. But he ended up seeing me too, and came over and like he didn't remember my name. I can't blame him. But he knew that I was from Rochester, and came over and said hello. And I mean, I was like, for a college president, especially at U of R, where he meets hundreds of people a week.
Right.
I was very impressed with that. And I think it's little things like that really speak of the character of a person. And that's obviously a big reason why U of R has continued to really flourish over the years and become the area's largest employer, right?
So, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And then who's the largest private employer? Is that Wegmans now?
Yes, because they're the second largest employer.
Yeah,
so overall. Yeah.
Okay, obviously it used to be Kodak, Xerox, all that, right? But that's a little different now, and I'm sure Paychex is on that list someplace, right? So we've got that to be proud of. And really, I'm doing this radio show, and so I do it every weekday, Monday through Friday. And so I asked Siri, how many weekdays are there in a year? So about 260 on average. And so, you know, what that means to me is I have to find 260 business owners and movers and shakers per year in Rochester to feed this funnel for my radio show. And I got to tell you, so far, I have like a waiting list. I don't know how I'm going to get all these people on the air.
That's good.
A lot of stuff going on. So, Duncan, before we leave, I always like to give our listeners, who a lot of them are beginning and middle stage entrepreneurs, and they want to learn, they need advice. You know, you have, you know, running the AIN School, I want to say School of Business, but it's the AIN Center for Entrepreneurship, and involved in a lot of the activities we talked about previously. So Duncan Moore, what is your advice to beginning to middle stage entrepreneurs to not only, you know, keep the car on the road, but to continue building a bigger engine, I guess, right?
Well, the number one thing is your network. Mm-hmm. It's a network of people you know and you can talk to and trust, because you can't do it yourself. You can't do it all yourself. It's rare that one person has all the skill set to do everything. And I think there's a tendency, particularly among technology people, to think, oh, I can learn that business stuff. That's easy. The technology is the hard part. That's just not the case. And it's probably not the best use of your time either. You should be focusing on what you're really good at, and get people to do stuff you might be good at, but not really good at. And that's a tough one to come to grips with sometimes. And we see that in our students who are in engineering. And the reason I started the whole technical entrepreneurship program was I wanted students to understand that it's important to publish papers. And it's nice to see your name in print and all that sort of thing. But the real question is, will somebody pay money to buy something that you invented? I mean, that's a really cool and satisfying result. And that's what happened when I started my company. It was like, you know, oh, people actually buy stuff. And people start companies for lots of different reasons. But it's usually not about making money. It's really about the satisfaction of either being your own boss or getting to decide something or move something along that you have a passion about. So, I mean, they should make money at the end of the day, because they can't afford to really be losing money unless they're very rich already. And so it's that kind of passion that exists here. And the optics department here has had a long history of entrepreneurship that dates back to 1953.
Wow.
When the then director of the Institute of Optics, Bob Hopkins, started Tropel.
Oh, yeah,
out
sure.
In Fairport, out in Fairport.
Yeah.
And we've now found 135 graduates of this department who've started over 220 companies.
Wow.
And a third of those are here in Rochester.
That's
so
crazy.
It's one of those things that when I arrived here as a graduate student, I never thought about starting a business.
But then you did.
But everybody was talking about it. It was kind of infectious.
Yeah.
And then, as you know, it's, in 1980, I started Great Lens Corporation. So it's that whole philosophy of getting the students to think about their ideas, not just great ideas, but is there a market opportunity associated with it?
That's great. So to recap, build your network, which I agree with you. That's number one. I mean, don't be an island. When I first started my company back in 95, I met the assistant of Tom Galassano, and I asked her, do you think Tom would have lunch with me and I could pick his brain? And she called me a week later, and She said he will. And we went to the Northside Inn, and I filled up a whole notebook full of notes, and he even paid for lunch. And, you know, people like Arunas Chisonis, Lauren Dixon, Dick Kaplan, Phil Saunders, I would reach out to them and say, hey, can I pick your brain? I need a mentorship hour. And always yes, always yes. So that, very, very important. Learn from, model the masters, right? And then you said it, you nailed it. That's probably the second most important thing, is find out what your superpower is, right? Find out what you do best and how can you spend 90%+ of your time doing that. And a good entrepreneur will delegate everything else. And a friend of mine, Darren Hardy, says, not abdicate, you'll delegate, and you'll set up systems to, and then he says, inspect what you expect. So you have your finger on the pulse, you're just not doing it. And we all, hopefully you find out what that is and you spend most of your time doing that. So, well, Duncan, this has been super fantastic. Believe it or not, it's been an hour. I know at the beginning of the show, you said, are we going to have enough stuff to talk about? We could probably talk another few hours about everything that you're doing and you know, optics and photonics and Rochester, University of Rochester, and entrepreneurship. So much stuff going on. And you've got your finger right in the middle of a lot of it. So great person, and for you, you're a great person and a great time to be involved in Rochester as the Renaissance happens. And I'm glad you're involved because I think that will help out a lot of people. So thank you for what you're doing, Duncan Moore from the University of Rochester, for the U of R and Rochester overall. We greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And Duncan, what if somebody wants to reach out to you, what is the best way?
Email.
Email.
Yeah.
And what is your email?
Duncan.Moore@rochester.edu.
Very cool. And if you want that, I have it. So you can email me at david@davidmamano.com. And that's M-A-M-M-A-N-O. Be happy to connect you with Duncan. Either he or Lynn will get back to you within 24 hours. Appreciate that. And also, too, please contact me as well if you or you know somebody should be on the show, a Rochester entrepreneur, business owner, mover or shaker. Please contact me once again, david@davidmamano.com. This is the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. Once again, I'm here with Duncan Moore from University of Rochester. Duncan, thanks again. I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And be sure to stay awesome.
Canandaigua's newest radio station, 1310 WOKR.